Now, local news from Montana Public Radio.
I'm Eric Whitney. We're continuing now our series of interviews on the new draft management plan for the Flathead National Forest. So far, we've heard from the Forest Service, the timber industry, and the Montana Wilderness Association. Today, we'll get perspective from a pair of environmental groups in the Swan Valley. I recently spoke with Keith Hammer, chair of the Swan View Coalition, and Arlene Montgomery, the program director for Friends of the Wild Swan. This new Flathead National Forest Plan, big deal, significant?
Absolutely. This is what's going to guide management on the Flathead National Forest for at least the next 15 years. So this is really an important document that needs to be thoroughly reviewed.
It's a 180-degree change from where the Flathead Forest was headed in 2006 when it drafted its first revision and then put that on hold until this year. So it's really significant in that way as well.
What's different in this draft versus the one they were working on in 2006?
2006, it cut the suitable timber base in about half, down to 328,000 acres, in order to better address the needs of fish and wildlife and water quality. And now this plan basically puts almost all of that back into the timber base. And so, you know, we'll have those impacts reinstated, you know, on grizzly bears and lynx and wolverine and other fur bears, fish, bull trout, those kind of things.
When I talked to Joe Kruger about the plan, he said that the suitable timber area was something over 600,000 acres, but by the time you subtract out riparian areas and stuff like that, it comes down to about 500,000 acres as suitable for timber harvest. What do you guys think of that number?
This draft proposed action actually does away with the measurable standards for riparian areas. The forest plan that was amended in 1995 for fish had measurable standards for temperature, for pool frequency, and other metrics that determine good fish habitat. And that's especially important for bull trout because bull trout require the coldest and cleanest water of all salmonids. And so you need to have some kind of measure of, okay, are you moving forward and towards good fish habitat or are you backsliding? If you don't have a measure, you can't tell.
We went straight to logging as the primary issue. For the two of you, is that the number one issue that you're looking at in the forest plan, or are there other things that you think are equally important?
I think, you know, we're looking at impacts. What in the forest plan will impact wildlife, fish, water quality. Logging would be the main thing. Roads and how many roads they're maintaining on the landscape. Motorized recreation and those impacts in grizzly bear habitat, lynx critical habitat. It's all encompassing, but I think the logging is the biggest thing that really jumps out.
A lot of what we're concerned about is wildlife connectivity. It's not just a matter that even if the Forest Service was to say, let's take all of our high elevation roadless areas and make it wilderness, which they're not. They're only recommending something less than a third or somewhere around a third of their roadless areas. Even if you had good connection in those high elevation areas, the logging issue comes up in the more mid and lower elevation areas that are equally critical to wildlife habitat, security, and migration and connectivity.
What's your vision for the future of the Flathead? What do you want to see?
Well, as a matter of fact, Keith and I did submit this to the Flathead over a year ago. We call it the Citizen Revision for the Flathead because the new planning rule requires that they use the best available science. And so we wanted to make sure with a comprehensive bibliography that that information was before the Flathead. I can't see in this proposed action where they really used it to the extent we would like them to, but we're hopeful that they will develop an alternative in their NEPA document that incorporates what we see as the best available science to protect wildlife.
In our citizen revision, it takes all roadless lands and would recommend them for wilderness and takes some other really critical areas for wildlife connectivity and would remove roads and restore those so that they would again function as good wildlife connectivity habitat. Where this proposed plan of the Flatheads falls way short, the south end of the Whitefish Range, no wilderness recommendations, snowmobiling. The entire north end of the Swan Range, the same thing, it's snowmobiling, rather than having wildlife security. The biggest problem here is it's mostly about politics, this forest plan, and it's very little about science.
Do you think that there's room for logging on the Flathead?
There's room for logging on the Flathead, but it's more, those lands are more in the front country. And where that makes the most difference, in fact, for people that are concerned about fire right in their backyard, if their land adjoins the Forest Service and that type of thing. But it also recognizes these scientific principles that are broadly accepted in the scientific community, that we need to reconnect these core areas, and not just through the high elevation roadless lands, but further down through some restoration work in the mid elevations and low elevations as well.
The Flathead, you know, it's critical habitat for lynx. It's critical habitat for bull trout. They're on the endangered species list because they're in decline. This is the important habitat for them. And so I think that really needs to be the premier driver of what goes on this forest, is what's good for wildlife, water quality, and fish.
The Forest Service said roughly 500,000 acres is appropriate for logging. They're talking about 28 million board feet a year. Do you look at it in terms of those numbers that makes for an easy comparison of how your views differ from theirs?
We look at holistically on the landscape and not having a target that, okay, we have to meet this target every year no matter what. I think that kind of mentality is not good for wildlife, fish, or water quality.
But again, to go back to the 2006 draft revised plan, that was a very significant step on the part of the Forest Service to say, here's how we're going to address the controversy over protecting all of these other resources and having a reliable logging program, is by not having so many of these marginal areas in our timber base. And what they've done is they've totally reneged on that. They've doubled again or reinflated the timber base. And all of that promises more and more and ever lasting controversy, rather than what they tried to do in 2006 was to lower that level of controversy and come up with something more reliable for the timber industry.
So in your eyes, the numbers that are in the draft action aren't backed up by sound science?
I can't say that. I haven't seen the analysis. And that's where the environmental impact statement will lay that out. How did they come up with this? Then they have to look at other alternatives and say, well, which one is better? And then they have to actually identify what the environmentally most sound alternative is. So this is just the very beginning of this process.
If what's important now is to come up with one of the alternatives in the environmental impact statement that reflects your values, what do you think the odds are that that will be the one that is selected? Because maybe it's just my jaded point of view. I don't see that happening.
The agency is bound by law in the National Environmental Policy Act to do a fair comparison between those alternatives. And they will have those figures in that draft EIS if they do their job well. A year from now, hopefully we can sit down and answer these very questions if they have that broad range of alternatives in the draft environmental impact statement.
And I would add that they have included alternatives we've suggested in other, Amendment 21 to the Forest Plan had an alternative that we suggest and we actually worked with the Forest Service on. So in terms of getting an alternative in there, I think that it's very reasonable to ask for that. Obviously, what they choose that's another whole issue that I don't have any control over.
How optimistic are you that the kind of management you're advocating for will actually be adopted as the forest plan?
Well, I think the likelihood of it in this political environment is really slim. But the importance of having that fair analysis among a broad range of alternatives is that it most certainly, at a minimum, should move the agency away from this forest plan into something that's far more protective of fish and wildlife and water quality.
You know, I think there's a popular perception that, quote unquote, radical environmentalists, all they do is file lawsuits, always gumming up the works because they're always filing lawsuits. From the point of view of folks who have filed lawsuits and been successful, use them as tools, are they a tool that might be appropriate to achieving a plan for the Flathead National Forest that is appropriate, I guess?
I think it's that misconception that, oh, all it takes to, you know, file an appeal or a lawsuit is a postage stamp and you send it in. And that's far, far from the truth. both our organizations, we are involved in projects, planning, policy from the very beginning. We go out on the ground with the Forest Service, meet with the agency. We try to do everything we can to get a project or plan to be the best that it can so it doesn't negatively impact fish and wildlife. I think it's just a cheap shot when people say, oh, you just file lawsuits off, you know, like it's nothing. It's something we take really seriously. And, you know, you can look, there are many projects that have gone through on the Flathead that were not litigated. And, you know, the ones that are ones that we feel very strongly are not good for fish, wildlife, or water quality. Lawsuits were successful in getting protection for the bull trout, for getting critical habitat for the bull trout. That took numerous lawsuits over 20 years to get there. They're an important part of our legal system.
Probably by the time we ever get to the point of filing a lawsuit on, say, a timber sale that we haven't been able to resolve our differences, we've probably got at least $10,000 or more invested in going out on the ground, going to meetings, reading the documents, and on and on and on.
Both of Montana's senators feel that there needs to be a lot more timber harvested from national forests in Montana. I wonder how you see the efforts of Montana's senators in national forest management.
I think it's bad policy. You know, they might rail against, oh, we need bottom-up and we don't want Washington top-down. Well, that's the epitome of Washington top-down. It's not looking at what is the capability of the forest to produce some products, but yet protect the wildlife and the amenities that are really the drivers in the Flathead Valley. I mean, over 2 million people come to Glacier Park and the Flathead every year to catch a glimpse of a grizzly bear. They don't come to see big clear cuts. It's really misguided for the Congress to be sort of inserting itself into setting mandatory levels of logging without having gone through the analysis.
Again, I keep coming back to this suitable timber base on the Flathead, but this plan and why it's so important that it be corrected, it basically inflates the timber base to twice the size they proposed in 2006 and are basically saying, Congress, there's a bigger area to throw your money at. And with the things that Senator Daines in particular is saying, or the precedent that Senator Tester would set with this Forest Jobs and Recreation Act, they want to mandate that logging level on the national forests. And that's our concern of what will happen here by having an artificially inflated timber base and basically pay lip service that this will also protect water quality and fish and grizzly bears. My advice is that everyone that loves their national forest for their reason should write an email or a letter to the addresses on the Flathead Forest website, and then turn that also into a letter to the editor.
I think people need to let the Forest Service know how important it is to have these lands that support this wildlife. These animals that were here when Lewis and Clark came through, and now where else do you find this full suite of species? The Flathead is so unique and so wonderful in that it has that, and why would you want to do anything to jeopardize that?
The public needs to not get discouraged. Government, unfortunately, is largely about money and getting industry what it wants. And it's been that way for a long time. And that's part of what we're faced with here. And it just takes that groundswell of people in a democratic process to weigh in with their voice to help counterbalance the money.
Keith and Arlene, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you. We appreciate being able to talk to you and to your listeners.
Keith Hammer is chair of the Swan View Coalition, and Arlene Montgomery is program director for Friends of the Wild Swan. The Flathead National Forest scoping period for public comments on its draft management plan runs through May 15th. You can find more information and links to previous interviews in our series on our website, mtpr.org. I'm Eric Whitney.